Hello and welcome to the 31st episode of the Naina Redu Experience, the second one in 2017. Yes, it's still Happy New Year! It started out pretty well. In fact, it started out earlier than I would have liked it to. It's just, you know, within the first week, I mean, on the third, yeah, oh God, the number of emails and the number of phone calls, it's been crazy. I was like, one more week, can I please just stay in bed? I think the only saving grace is that it isn't as cold as Delhi winters usually are. So I don't really mind getting out of bed slightly earlier, which is about 11 o'clock. Don't tell anyone. So for the 31st episode of the Naina Redu Experience, I wanted to talk about the main topic, as the title of the video suggests, is why is a blog more important than any other social media channel? But I will also be talking about a recent change in how I have started writing emails. It's not a recent change, actually. Initially, when I started out my career, I used to do that anyways, but somewhere along the line, I kind of forgot about it. So the main subject is why is a blog more important than any other social media channel? And some of you obviously might disagree, which is fine, but this is my podcast where I try to share my opinions and my experiences on how I did it and what I think is important. So I think blogs are more important than any other social media channel, which doesn't mean that if you have just a blog, you'll be fine. You need to be on other social media channels also, because how else would you get the word out there about the work that you're doing? There will be some people who will come to your blog and check what the latest updates are. But for more consistent traffic, for newer people to discover it, you do need other social media channels. So the main reason why I think a blog is more important is why, for example, a website is more important. It's like your own personal CV or your bio data or your portfolio. When someone comes to you and you meet them somewhere and you say that, hey, you know, I'm a photographer, where can they see your work? You can immediately open up your phone and you can show them your portfolio in one place. You can build it in a certain way and say that this page on my website is my portfolio. And you don't need to be a photographer for that. You could be a writer, you could be a chef, you could be a blogger, and you could have this one page where you have case studies of clients that you worked with. For example, a chef might have these tables he's curated for restaurants or for private exclusive dinners, and he could have one page where he has photos of those dinners and recipes of or the menus from those dinners that he has curated, or the name of the client, for example. So there's this one stop shop or one address where someone can go to and figure out what it is that you do. So that is the key reason. The other reason is, of course, that usually your own website or your blog won't suddenly disappear. In the sense that, for example, Twitter recently closed its Vine video service, the Vine short clips that used to have VINE, in case you're not aware. So that was a social media platform where a lot of people were creators on Vine, and they were influencers on Vine, for example, and they had been there for years and they had millions of followers. But because Twitter decided that it was no longer a profit center for them, or the business unit was not making money for them, or maybe it required more resources, I don't know what the actual reason was why they shut it down, but they shut it down. If you were an influencer on Vine, and if you didn't have your own website where you were also posting your short Vine clips and the comedy or whatever you were doing with Vine, what are you going to do now? I mean, sure, one of the ways to do it is that now Vine has told you, okay, we're shutting it down, and they've given you this window of 1 month where you can download everything you've ever created on Vine, and then you start posting it on your blog. But it's not the same. If you've created 10,000 videos on Vine, for example, you can't repost them as fresh content because your audience has already seen it on Vine. So while you might create a new repository on your blog and say that, okay, all that content can be found on the blog here, but now you'll have to start from scratch on your blog and build that audience all over again. And it is important to bring your audience back to your blog from whether it is Twitter or it is Instagram or Facebook or Vine or Snapchat or any platform that you're on. You need to bring your audience to come to your blog because that's the main, repository of whatever you have done till date. Now, I have been blogging since 2004. A lot of my initial blogging was done on Blogspot, blogger.com, which used to be a free platform. I think it still is. And on the blog right now on nena.co, I haven't imported all that content, but it still exists. It still exists on blogspot.com, and I could port it over. It's just that it doesn't really make sense to copy paste everything from there and bring it to this blog because it's not relevant to the brand that I have created now. But I had a blog then, and I had a branding blog after that, which was hosted on my own domain. It was hosted on aside.in, aside.in, and all that content from that blog is currently on nena.co because I think it is relevant. I was in the branding industry, and now also I am in another aspect of the same branding industry as a photographer and a blogger. And I have case studies on how I worked with brands, and I help them, name their brands or create logos for their brands, for example. So that is relevant, and I have all that content. So I have content on my blog since 2006, even though the nena.co domain only existed or started existing in, I think, 2009, 2010. Is when I bought and booked that domain and actually started hosting nena.co. Now, if I have some Vine videos, like really few, and they're not really relevant to what I do now, so I'm not going to be importing any of that. But my social media channels like Twitter and Instagram and Facebook act as broadcasting mediums. So I publish something on the blog. For example, a blog post has 20 photos that I have created in collaboration with a brand, or I have traveled somewhere and I have shot these images, which are part of that blog story now. And then each image is posted separately on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. Now, Instagram doesn't allow you to really click on a URL, for example, if you post it in a caption. So Instagram doesn't really drive that much traffic to my blog, but Twitter and Facebook do. So I post those images and I bring traffic eventually to the blog. The number of followers I have on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook are important, but my most important metric is the number of people who come to my blog and look at the entire story that I have created for either one particular brand or people who want to sit and look through the work that I've done. So, when brands write in asking for statistics, like how many, can you share your blog statistics with us? It's such a, what statistics do you want and how do you decide which statistics are relevant? So many clients don't even understand why a blog is important. They are more keen to work with people who are Instagrammers, for example. And I'm not saying that that's bad, that has its own use case. But when you're coming to a blog and you're asking for statistics, it's not as simple as how many, for example, people come and look at your blog. So the word for that is the number of sessions, roughly. So the number of sessions you have on your blog is equivalent to the number of people who come to your blog, for example, every month. Now, each person who comes to your blog is a session. Each visitor is one session, okay? Now, in that one session, each person might look at four pages on your blog, which means four different stories, four different categories, or four different links on nena.co, for example. So that one person now accounts for four page views. Those are page views. So it's not just important to know how many page views a blog has. For example, when I was doing Facebook ads, I was getting about 80 to 90,000 page views every month. I stopped doing Facebook ads now, and now I get about 45,000 page views every month. Those 45,000 page views mean that I have about 10,000 sessions. So it means I have about 10,000 people coming to my blog every month, okay? But they end up looking at 45,000 pages. Those 10,000 people look at 45,000 pages. So you need to also know how many pages are being seen per session. I know blogs that have 100,000 page views in a month, but their pages per session is maybe one page per session or 1.2 pages per session. I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm saying you need to understand these terms so that you can accordingly pitch to a client and explain to a client why this is important. So if someone comes to my blog and they spend 15 minutes looking at four different pages on my blog, I think they are a more engaged visitor to my blog than someone who goes to another blog and spends just, 2 minutes looking at one story and then leaves, right? So their engagement is one page. My engagement is four pages. One person has spent time to look at four different pages on my blog, which I would assume is because they wanted to see what else I do and there was content that they were interested in. So my 10,000 visitors give me 45,000 page views. Whereas someone else's 10,000 visitors might give them 10,000 page views. You know, the other aspect that you need to look at is the bounce rate. Now, I don't know the exact definition of the bounce rate is, but it means that I think there's a certain time by which if someone comes to your blog and how quickly they leave it, within the first 5 seconds, within the first 15 seconds, within the first 1 minute. Now, most of the blogs that I have seen on similarweb.com, where you can compare to some extent what traffic blogs get for the last 6 months, forgot what I was saying. Oh, yeah, bounce rate. So a lot of blogs have bounce rates of 80%, 70% bounce rate. So I think what that means is that 70% of the audience that comes to the blog leaves within the first 15 seconds. The bounce rate on my blog, for example, is 11%, which I think is nuts. Now, I'm not saying Google Analytics is accurately capturing all the data, but if it's the same platform being used by everybody, then there is some basic balance there, right? Which you can, on basis of which you can compare all these blogs. Now, how do you get this kind of data for platforms like Instagram and Twitter? You know, Twitter says number of impressions. What does it mean? I don't own that data. Regardless of whether I've had an account on Twitter since 2006 and I was the first Indian on Twitter, I don't own that data. I don't have all the insight which I think might be useful to me. I mean, brands sometimes do ask that, oh, you posted this tweet for us as part of that blog story and campaign that you did. What can you tell us what the reach was? But see, that's harder to understand even for someone like me. And I don't know on what basis clients are doing this reach and impression business. For something like the blog, I can very clearly tell you that these are the number of people who came in, what were the most popular stories. I think it also allows me to create more engaged content because it is in my control how I present that content. Sometimes there are galleries, it starts with these 5-star images and then I go and tell the entire story one by one and in the end again there is another gallery. If there are some people I want to thank and I have their portraits, I can include those. Now, posting each of these images separately might not make sense on a Twitter or on an Instagram because not everyone's going to look at that entire story, each image, all 20 images one by one. And even if they do, it won't look like a cohesive, comprehensive story to them. So the blog, I keep telling everyone, go to the blog and see the story. I mean, of course, I am happy with the extra traffic, but it doesn't give you context otherwise. And I think the future is contextual campaigns. The future is a narrative. The future is storytelling. Even though many of us talk about, oh, I'm a storyteller, storytelling, blah, blah, blah. Most of us don't really understand how it works and we find it hard to quantify how that works. When you say that, oh, I have a very engaged audience on Instagram, it's hard to say what do you mean by that engagement? Is it someone just coming and leaving a comment and saying, oh, you look so pretty? That I don't think that's engagement. I think engagement is if they come to Instagram, they see your photo, they like the product that you have showcased in it, and then they click somewhere and then they go and see that, which is not possible on Instagram. Don't you understand? Like how it's, unless you have a verified account, and most of us don't. We don't have millions of followers. We don't have the kind of PR that can help us get verified accounts on Instagram, for example. So we can't include URLs in our Insta stories. You know, like a blogger like Kiara Firagni can. We can't. Most of us can't in any case. So how are you measuring that? How are you getting traffic to your blog and to that product or the link to that product on the client's website? I think a blog is a blog. Even on Twitter, you can do that. You can include a link. And then when you get traffic to your blog from there, you can say, acha, this came from Twitter. I know that. How does a client know ki Twitter mein kidhar se aaya hai? You know, like which profile on Twitter did you get that link from? I don't think there is a way to do that. I mean, not for, unless you have a really good comprehensive back-end program that measures all these things. So it's you might see that it came from Twitter, but from where on Twitter you might not know. And unless you're only working with one person in a particular period of time, Only then maybe you can say, okay, these links are coming from Twitter because we're currently working with Naina. But if you're working with 50 bloggers for something, you can't say who sent what. That is why you come back to us and you ask us and you say, what was the reach? What are the number of impressions, etc. But what does that mean in terms of return on investment? The ROI is everything, right? So I think it really helps to have a blog where you don't just post photos, of personal style bloggers, for example, only post photos of what they're wearing. That also works. But I think for personal style, it probably makes sense to also have a good way to broadcast this content on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook. But for someone like me who has a story to tell, it, unless I'm only doing that one story for that 1 week where I'm posting two photos from that same story for that entire 1 week and that's all I do on Instagram, for example, then I can create that storyline and I can create a comprehensive start to finish and my audience might be like, this is currently the story that's going on. Let's go to her Insta profile and see all the photos there. But I think that is a little more investment required than the investment of clicking on a link and coming to a blog and looking at the blog post there and then. You have the entire story in front of you comprehensively and you're done. tomorrow if Twitter shuts down, I still have my blog. You don't have to be like, oh no, Twitter doesn't exist anymore. How do I follow Naina's work? If you are interested in following my work, you can come to my blog. And I mean, earlier RSS subscriptions used to exist. They still exist. You can still subscribe via RSS. But you can just generally keep coming to the blog and checking on it every week or every 2 days or every month to see, okay, what has she done in the last 1 month? And what is the interesting stuff that you would like to see? You might enjoy a particular category of work that I post, like Eyes for Street Style, for example. And you only want to see that. So I have a domain for that. I post on eyesforstreetstyle.com. It redirects to a category on my blog, but that's the category that you enjoy. So that's the category you can check out. You don't need to even look at the rest of the blog, for example. So you need to invest on your own domain, on your own website. It is your identity. This is one of the best ways to become a brand. You need that. Tomorrow, for example, if you have set up a store, where do you think you'll put that store? You have a blog, right? Write it there. Anyways, you're creating all this content instead of leaving it on like Instagram and tomorrow Instagram shuts down. What are you going to do? You have all these images that you're creating anyway. You might as well just put it on your blog and do that also, na? What is the extra effort is already being put there in creating all that content. You just want to put it on another platform. And again, Facebook shuts down, Instagram shuts down, Twitter shuts down. They're all business units. They need to make business decisions. And if they realize that they're not making profits anymore and they don't want to, bleed money, they might just decide to shut them down. But no one can shut down your blog. I mean, of course, worst case scenario, if the internet just goes away, that is a different scenario altogether, in which case we all have much bigger problems. But the blog won't really go anywhere. I mean, even if a platform like WordPress shuts down, which I don't think it ever will because it is open source, something or the other will stay. Even then, you can port that data to some other platform or the other and you can still, you have your own domain. So, that's what I meant. And I have been harping on this forever and saying that it's important to have your own blog, your own platform where you can publish all this content that you have. And in any case, brands will be happier to learn that even though they've only hired you for Instagram, you are also posting it on your blog. Win-win for everyone. So that was the main topic that I wanted to talk about in the 31st episode. The other thing I wanted to talk about was that 3-4 days ago, I saw Tom Peters posted on Twitter talking about how emails should be masterpieces, how each one of our emails should be a masterpiece. And my first thought in my head was like, who's got the time? Yeah, masterpiece, I mean, what? Because the number of emails I get, for example, and people are always asking for, can you share your rate card? Can you share your proposal? Blah, blah, blah. And the context is so little. They don't want to tell you what brand it is. They don't want to tell you what campaign it is. They're like, are phone launch ho raha hai. Iske liye hume 3 tweet chahiye, 3 Facebook posts and 3 Instagram updates. And I'm like, what does that even mean? I don't want to do this. Bullshit. And what is the brand? What is the product? What is the campaign? How does it tie in with my brand? Will it make sense for my audience? You have to tell me now what product it is. So generally when I get emails like this, more than wanting to respond with an email that is a masterpiece, I just want to tell them to sort off. But it is a business. And all requests for proposals must be responded to, hopefully not with abuses. So I thought about it, and then just today I got an email from this gentleman I'd met about 2 weeks ago, and the essence of the email is that he is offering to help me promote my brand, but he first sets context and foundation on who he is, how what he does might be relevant to what I do, and how in turn he can help me. And I was just fascinated by how he has written the email. This is someone who's offering to do something for me with no expectations. And he has written to me with details of who he is, what he does. And that email is a masterpiece. You know, he set context, he's where we had met. And then a personal anecdote of how he met someone who also knows me and the conversation they had. And a small brief on who he is, what he has done. A link to an interview he has given someone, which also gives more context to me on who he is, etc. And in the end, he's offering to help. And I thought to myself that, you know, there are so many people on the planet. We can't possibly invest time in meeting each and every one of them, no matter how badly we want to. So the mode of communication that I use most these days is email. So I have now decided that while I might not be able to meet everyone in person and convey my sense of passion and enthusiasm and energy, I can try and do that on email. Now, I'm not saying you, someone who sends you a spammy press release and you need to like write to them why they need to unsubscribe you. But if it is someone who's, you know, personalize the email and try to explain why your point of view might be more valid to the brand than what they have approached you with. Instead of just saying that, no, I don't work on barter, explain in two lines why, and go back to them with a more with something that you think they might agree to. So a counter proposal. Instead of just saying no barter and, you know, thanks a lot, but this is not happening, saying, okay, you know, I've been around for 12 years. I think you would understand that I don't really do barter anymore. But if you are going to do barter, then the best I can do is include it in an Instagram story, for example. But only if I'm allowed to choose the product. So, you know, make it personal. And then obviously make a counter offer and say that, look, if it is a paid collaboration, these are the leeways that I have. These are the things that I can actually do for you. And I think personalize each email. Make it personal. Make that person feel that you are responding to them and that you're not doing a generic response that you do to everyone else. Which is what it is, right? When you meet someone in person, you want to engage with them. You want to make eye contact. You want to make them feel like you're talking to them. Otherwise, it's not a conversation. Otherwise, it's just small talk, which anyways I hate. So I am now going to try and do that on email. Try to engage with people personally, if possible, because I don't know who they are. So it's obviously it's hard to make it personal, but to the best of my ability. I'm not saying it's a resolution for 2017, but I'm going to take it as a sign. First, Tom Peters tweeted it, and then this gentleman sent me this amazing email. And I will take it as a sign, and I will use it like that. And I think we should try to do that, especially when I'm not keen on talking to people on the phone. I don't like receiving phone calls unless there is a, you know, precedent or a project that we're already discussing. And then you schedule a call time and we call, talk. Then it's different. But otherwise, yes, being detailed on email and... Also, yeah, I'm not saying that you need to explain yourself in the sense why you charge so much money, for example. But explain in the sense that, you know, a two-line reasoning on why you think that this is not the best idea and what the counter idea is, and be a little more engaged. I don't know if I'll be able to make each email a masterpiece, but I'm going to try. And at some point, I will get back to you and let you know how that went. So thank you for listening to the 31st episode of the Naina Redhu Experience. And as always, please, if there are questions that you have, please leave comments either on the YouTube video or on the blog post or Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. I'm everywhere. Thanks for listening. Bye.